Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. Yes, we are live despite the snow and ice storms hitting our region. And this is Stephen Zimmer coming to you out of Lexington, Kentucky for episode number 253. Joining me tonight, the always amazing R.G. Westerman and the Dark Style One himself, Daniel Dark. Hello, my friends. I know you guys are both warm and we're all together, at least, online here.
At least, yes.
Yes. I'm telling you my story. I barely beat an ice storm.
Ice right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was not fun. I was telling you guys the story right before the show began, but it was like I had to come from Indiana because we were helping Holly's folks. Her elderly father had broken his leg, was getting out of a rehab facility, so we're helping them for on short notice for the last few days. And we got out just in time to beat an ice storm back in Lexington, and they had a big snowfall there a couple days ago, and so they had just cleared the roads enough for us to get out there, and then we came into Lexington literally with probably 30 minutes to spare with the ice, freezing rain and ice starting to hit here, so it was an adventure, but that shows my dedication to the Star Chamber show. I'm here. It didn't stop me.
So, have
yeah, at least it's just an online space.
Yeah, I got here in time to set up and all that good stuff, but I'm glad to be here, though. I'm glad to be out of that mess. That wasn't fun.
Did you set up a libation for you?
What's that, Daniel?
Set up a libation for you.
I did. I actually, thanks to Holly's mother, I'm going to give her credit. She knows how much I love my bourbon, and she was out with Holly shopping, and she got me a 1.75 liter of Evans Williams as a surprise. I didn't ask her for it. She literally came back with a big bottle of Evan Williams, and here you go, Steve. And she says, I'd like to have a highball, too. And so, of course, I shared it with her, of course. That would be mean not to share. And so while the snow was outside, I did get to enjoy some little bourbon a couple days up there. I had a lot of work to do as well with everything going on. But it was really, really cool to get that gift. And I nursed it so that I had plenty enough to bring back to Lexington so that I wouldn't have to worry about getting my traditional drink for tonight's broadcast. So I do have something to keep me a little warm, and my traditional one drink during the show is at hand. So that I know you're all so relieved to hear that.
Well, I have my fork, my cigar, you know, already fired up. So I've been doing this for over an hour already before y'all got here.
That's awesome. I tell you what, I've chatted a little bit with Clayton Barnett. He's actually going to be coming up pretty soon as a featured guest, folks. But he was telling me about how he was enjoying his conversations with you, and I think that you're he mentioned I think online about how he might be writing a little bit about your trolley going into some of his fiction work. So I'd love that if that happens.
That's cool.
That would be cool. But we got Kenzie Michaels in the chat room, and we also have Clayton. He is in the chat room. So he and actually, a special thanks to Daniel Dark for letting Empress Faustina and her three grown sons use his refurbished cigar trolley two generations from now. So, hey, good news. Your trolley will last, evidently. So it's built to last, you know, at least two generations from now. But, yeah, according to Clayton. So how are you, my friends? I have not gotten to interact with too many people in the last few days. So to bring me up to date, RG, what's happening? What's new in the world?
Oh, not too much different, actually. You know, we're still circling the wagons. We're under a sheet of ice. It's still falling where I am. It's a little bit ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, I think we're going to get a nice – classic Kentucky ice storm. I think this is going to be one of those,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Daniel's a little farther south, so maybe he'll escape it, but I hope they're not
it,
fun.
They hit Nashville and stuff, but you know, the one coming in Saturday is what I'm worried about, because it's talking about being like 20 degrees and raining. So
Yeah. There's another wave after this one, so yeah. And it may run a little bit south. My husband is a kind of a weather follower. He likes to follow the weather. And if he had his way, he'd be a storm chaser. So yeah. So I know far more about the weather than I should.
Well, it's a good thing. It comes in handy.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And it's good to know what's coming your way. That's the only way we could have planned our trip today, but to get back safely in Lexington. But you got to know how these things work. And of course, living in Kentucky, RG, you know as well as I do that, yeah, the weather changes about every 15 minutes here.
Yep.
It's one of those.
Unless it's this kind of weather until it, you know, this kind of weather settles in for at least a good week and a half.
Well, it's like the other day. Yeah, it was nice outside. All of a sudden, it started raining, and I woke up. You know, I went in the house and everything, finished up everything I was doing in the trolley for that day. Went in the house, and about 10 minutes after I got in the house, it changed over to snow, big snowflakes and everything, and woke up to about 2 inches of snow on the ground.
Oh, my goodness. Yep.
Well, this is a perfect setting for RG, Daniel, myself to write like a wintry-inspired tale, something set in a wintry setting. This is definitely
George R. R. Martin already took Ice Zombies, so I can't go down that road.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you
I'll
can always put your
something else.
Yeah, well, you can always put your own
Maybe
stamp
ice
on
vampires.
Various creatures. Otherwise, nobody
That's
would ever
true.
Do another
yeah.
vampire book. You know, I mean,
that's true. Yeah.
There's two or three of those out there, but but
cyberpunk vampires.
Yeah, I mean, yes, come up with your own that's not quite like the walkers there, so the White Walkers, and
that's
you'd be
true.
Fine.
I'll figure something out.
Oh man, yeah. It's
When it comes to stories and everything, it doesn't matter how many's been done before you. You can always
there
bring
are
your
no
story
original
to life.
Stories.
No.
Yeah, I
no,
got into
I
an
mean,
argument with someone about that.
What was the argument?
Oh yeah, tell
well,
us. Sorry.
Well,
this is a good story.
Someone is saying that a certain fairly recent vampire author had ripped off Anne Rice, and I was trying to make the point that you don't, when it comes to classic monsters, you don't rip anyone off. It's just an ongoing lore that builds upon itself. Because, I mean, technically Anne Rice ripped off Bram Stoker, and Bram Stoker ripped off whoever came before him, and so on and so on. And, I stand by. There are no original stories, just original authors.
That is a – you need to make a T-shirt and put it out with that slogan.
Yes, I should.
It's merchandise.
That's a good idea.
As we talk about on the show. Good point, though.
RGWesterman.com is going to have merch coming up.
Yes. And we will
really
definitely.
I may do that.
We will hype it on the show here, most certainly.
Yeah. I'll let you know as soon as it drops.
Yeah, I'll have to buy one of those T-shirts for sure, because I agree with you 150%. I always say don't fear to use a creature that's been used before, whatever. Mm-hmm. Just put your own voice to it or own stamp on, you know, your style to
Absolutely.
It. And things will work out. Don't panic. So don't be afraid
Absolutely.
To do vampires or whatever, werewolves, anything.
Yep.
So,
yep.
All right. Well, I guess we should probably recognize our awesome sponsors of the week real quick before we get too too far ahead because we're getting close to the call-in time for tonight's amazing featured guest who you guys are going to love. And tonight we have Marianne Pohl and the one, the only, Ren Garcia. So we get to answer that famous question as once more. But I'll go ahead and do Marianne's first, and then we'll take a look at Ren's spot and answer his question as we always do on the show. An invisible battle is being fought around us. If we listen closely, we can hear swords clashing in the war for human souls. The Iconoclast thriller series is not your typical horror. So, if you're looking for blood and guts just for the sake of blood and guts, you won't enjoy these books. But if you're looking for frightful stories in which ordinary individuals must face extraordinary circumstances and the supernatural, look no further. Visit Marianne Pohl's official site at www.mariannepohl.com. And that's MariannePohl, MariannePohl.com. And she is a fantastic writer. So, yes, I can personally endorse getting those books for sure. Good stuff. And now for the famous Ren Garcia spot from the League of Elder series. Here it goes.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Nope.
Who wants to answer? Nope.
Yes, we
all right, RG. All right, you answer. Okay, and yes, we are, Ren. All right, you've got your answers. And, he's one of the only writers I know of that has literally a 50-plus page fight scene. Not exaggerating, not joking. He literally has a 50-page fight scene in one of his books. It's around about there. Great stuff. I love Ren. He's a character. But, yeah, this week, Ren Garcia, Marianne Pohl, our sponsors, we love you. Thank you so much. And, so yes, back to the discussion. Original ideas, original authors, and stories, and all kinds of stuff. You know, it's a process, and we're gonna be getting into that a little bit tonight. But how is RG? I had not asked you a little bit. How is the writing side going lately with you?
Well, I'm It's hard to say. I have a lot of stuff percolating. It's a growing year, maybe.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I've got one sent. I've got the sequel sent with the editor right now. But the editor is going through some stuff as well, so that's kind of sitting. But I'm still on track for the spring release. And then I've got some other stuff kind of percolating. Yeah.
Excellent.
Percolating. Yep.
That's a good word too. I always like that word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been thrown off just a little bit the last few days from my riding regimen because of obviously having to travel and help and all that stuff. So
that makes a difference.
But
I
shifted a little bit to research. That's something I do when I'm get a little disruption like that. I'll shift over to some research and stuff, but ready to hit the ground running. And since obviously I won't be going anywhere, since we're going to be encased in ice, it should be a good time to get some extensive catch up done on my writing.
Because
I'm not going anywhere, and hopefully the power stays on. That's the other adventure in ice storms.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so we're just kind of crossing our fingers on that one, but. Oh boy, hey, not ghosts, but yeah. So I probably should mention though. Yeah, this past week has been a flurry, and that's one thing I did manage to get rolling was a whole bunch of Imaginarium stuff. And so I will run down the list really quick just for our regular listeners about what's all open right now. Guest and panelist applications are open. So if you're writers or filmmakers, publishers, editors, any kind of creative pro, and you want to be a panelist or guest, check out the Imaginarium site under guest and guest applications, and that form is open. Also open is the Imagine Award nominations, and that's for the 2021 Imagine Awards, and it's for books published in 2020. Authors, publicists, publishers all can nominate. Nominations are wide open right now for that. And then we also are running early discounts on expo space, early discounts on registrations, and we have sponsorships available. And last but not least, we just Monday issued our call for entries on the film festival. And that is very nice range of projects. We're talking features, shorts, documentaries, web series, and music video, with a slew of categories that are juried for awards. And we have our platform at filmfreeway.com. So lots of stuff going on the convention side. And, of course, this year it is a dual event. It's a hybrid event with live or in-person and also virtual content. So there you go. Yeah, quick update on that. So, and love the quote. Yeah, RG. What's that?
One thing that you'll like in probably 10 to 15 days, I will be back writing again.
Yes, good. Yeah, that is good. That is awesome. That is awesome.
I will be taking out a maiden voyage somewhere around that time.
Nice.
Very nice.
We want footage. We want pictures and footage.
Yes, we do. Lots of it. Yeah, that's going to be an epic time.
But we'll have to go on Instagram to get them.
You have to
What's that?
Snag up one of those. What's that, Dan?
You'll have to go to Instagram to get them.
Okay.
Well, yeah, we will. You ought to snag one of those good Tennessee filmmakers that live close to you to come document the maiden flight, you know, of the trolley or voyage or journey or whatever you call term it.
Do like a documentary, a full on like interviews and voiceovers and.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Full-on, introductory documentary. You'll have to, as RG said, percolate that idea.
Yeah,
see, y'all are going to make me want coffee before this is over.
I have a photographer that's wanting to do a photo shoot in it right now, so
I've got to
get it done so she can bring her models and everything out here to do a photo shoot.
Nice.
Very nice. That will be cool. So what are the plans? What do you have a concrete launch date or is it kind of still in the air or what? As far as the whole thing.
Like I said, 10 to 15 days, I will be launching this baby.
Nice. That's going to be awesome. That will be awesome.
That's exciting.
Just checking right here. Yeah, of course,
you know,
we follow
tow
with
it
you all the way
for
through.
Imaginarium. You could have it towed up so we could all see it. Like
you were
talking about the gas mileage last time.
Right.
You could just have it hitched to some big old truck or something, and just drive it on up here.
That'd be awesome.
I think that would be cheaper than towing it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
<We're kidding.
laughs> See, I don't know the numbers on this stuff. I'm just making stuff up as I go.
Or maybe the National Guard could loan you one of their pallet loading vehicles.
They charge a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they might. We talked about using a C-130.
The National Guard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know a C-130 pilot
connected.
Mentioned that last week, but we have to look into this. We can get the military to help. That'd be awesome. But
wow.
Hey, It does look like our guest has is on deck. And so, yeah, and without further ado, since we're just a couple of minutes past when the usual call-in time is, I will dive right into our guest. But tonight's guest is awesome and definitely a favorite of the show here, someone who's an award-winning author who currently is on a blog tour completing a trilogy for the Night Flyer Trilogy, historical romance, historical thriller series, and the book is Chaos in Milan. But that is not all. There is a whole bunch of stuff to her catalog, and of course, I'm speaking about the one, the only, Edale Lane, also known as Melody Romeo. Welcome onto the show. Hopefully we got you live.
Well, thank you. Can you
hear
me?
There you are. Yes, we can.
Awesome.
Wonderfully. Good to hear you. And thank you.
Excited to be here. Excited to be here. This is cool.
Because, yeah, you were we were talking about ice and snowstorms, and you're right in the midst of relocating yourself to places where there are such things even more intense than what we have here in Kentucky.
Oh, no. Let me tell you, Chilliwack, B.C. is in the Vancouver area. It's over on the West Coast. And it snows in the winter, but it's not any different than Tennessee. It's not at all. You talk about being up in it. I have been up in it in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Michigan, and it has been cold, 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 and 2 feet of snow, and all the highways closed. And I've had enough of this.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes, and you had a great blog post about this, which I will go ahead and mention. But, yeah, you actually have a career as a truck driver in addition to being the great author and creative that you are. So when you speak of driving, yeah, you're not just talking a regular vehicle either when you're going into
kind
of messes. So,
and for $2 a mile, I can tow that cool vehicle that everyone wants to see. It's an imaginary.
All right, everybody, we're going to crowdfund.
Yay,
we got a crowdfund now.
On the air.
get Daniel to imaginary him in the trolley. A crowdfund mission. We got it.
There you go.
I love it.
So how are you? How are you doing? Yeah, let's bring us up to date on the world of Edale Lane and tell us about all the good stuff going on with you.
Oh, so much excitement. Last Monday, a week ago Monday, I was up in the 2-foot dunk of snow in New Jersey, in Jersey City, slipped in the parking lot of this warehouse when I'm going from my truck to the office, landed smack on my shoulder, jammed it up, had to go to the ER. Nothing was broken, but it sprained. And I can still barely move my arm. It's just absolutely terrible. So then this morning my day started at 3 a.m., and I was driving across New Jersey, and my truck broke down. Then I sit on the side of the road for about 5 hours until the tow truck comes to get me, and now I'm in the hotel. So it's been a day.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Well, I'm glad you're here with us, at least. Hopefully you can forget about that stuff a little while.
I am excited to be with you. It's days like this that I can get a lot of writing done because I'm not driving for 12 hours. So.
Right. No pun intended, but that's true.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah. Better word there, RG. Yeah, thank you. But tell us about, you've just completed, it's out now, Chaos in Milan, mentioned it in your intro, but completing the Night Flyer trilogy. And, of course, you had those gorgeous covers of Engar Adarasa, who's just amazing. Amazing artist, and your covers look just amazing. But how has it been going with you on the reception for the books and everything with the trilogy?
It's been going really well. I'm pleased with the response. Sales are up. I've had people requesting more in the series, and because of that, I did leave an opening at the end of the conclusion of the trilogy that the series can continue. There's more to happen. So So we can look for some more Nightflyer books in the future.
It'll be one of those four-book trilogies, as we joke about. Nice. Yeah, no, it's a great series, and definitely embraces your passion for history, and that's something that always comes across whenever I'm talking with you or looking at, you know, your upcoming works or your works that are currently out. I mean, they all have such a historical depth to them, and that's, of course, this one, you know, gives you a hint about what it's all about when, you know, look at the title, Milan, and exploring that city was a big part of this one. So you got to go play in Italy quite a bit on the recent trilogy.
It's interesting because I got my master's degree in history a number of years ago, and the reason that I chose that subject, I was a teacher, a school teacher for 24 years, and wanted to get my master's degree so I could make more money. And I had an equal number of courses that I would need to complete my master's in science or in history. And I decided on history because I wanted to write historical fiction. And I had been writing historical fiction since I was in high school. It just never got published. It was never good enough. It was, you know, never any of that. But I pursued this line particularly to enhance my future writing career that I had envisioned 20 years ago.
Yes, and speaking of the writing career, and I mentioned it at the beginning, and I definitely don't want to cause the audience confusion, but I mentioned two names, Edale Lane and Melody Romeo, and you have books out under both names, and so it's a matter of selecting which project goes under which name, and what, you know, what each quote unquote brand will you know, a new project will come out under, I suppose.
Yes, and we're going to be looking at a lot more Edale Lane titles because they are selling at a much faster and higher rate and being much more profitable than the Melody Romeo titles for whatever reason. Possibly because the horror genre is so full of so many, you know, fabulous authors and books, and people have their followings. And my other niche of kind of a historical fantasy female protagonist kind of a vein has a smaller niche, and so a lot of people have found my books after Heart of Sherwood won an award, and that's the side I'm going to be focusing on more as we go along this year in 2021.
Very cool. So RG, where should we take this? Where should we explore? As far as the
world,
I'm
looking at this is really interesting. I'm going to have to get a hold of this Nightflyer trilogy because, like, I love the setting. I mean, I've never been to Italy, but I grew up in Europe for a little while, and I love, like, whenever I write, I like to make the town that I'm in or the setting or the countryside like almost one of the characters, and that looks really appealing. Did you actually travel? You said you did travel to Italy, or to, how did that work?
No, I would love to travel to Italy.
Yeah.
I do have family members that have traveled to Italy, and I traveled virtually through online tours and you know, all the everything that was available to me. And going back historically, I found a map of Milan from that time period that I was able to go by to see where things were and everything. And I try to make it as grounded, as historically accurate as possible.
Yeah, that is so cool.
Yeah, as far as that is a good thing you bring up, though, about using the virtual tours. Of course, you know, everybody's had fun playing with Google Earth and things like that. But as a historian person such as yourself, has that whole mushrooming of technology in recent years, has that really enhanced your historical side and research, or is it just kind of like a little bells and whistles kind of thing?
Oh, no, it is so fabulous. When I wrote my first published novel, which was Vlad, a novel that last year got re-released as Tribute in Blood under Melody Romeo's name, when I wrote that back in 2000, it was go to the library and look up all the books about Vlad the Impaler and read them, and look up all the books about Transylvania and that part of the world and Wallachia and Romanian history and search through them for every little detail that you need. And it was a lot of hours away from home and the internet. It's fabulous.
I agree. I second that.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I was just looking in the chat room to see if we had any questions just yet. Nothing coming through just yet. He just mentioned something. The jewel in the crown of northern Italy. Clayton mentioned Mediolanum. Am I pronouncing that right? Or Mediolanum? Just trying to see what Clayton's chatting about in there.
Yeah
he just had, I didn't know if that was a question he was trying to get through here. But it's I was also mentioning that, I tend to also dive in when I can to find, you know, YouTube, like on-site documentary kind of stuff or virtual tours of places when I'm researching myself, and does help give you a feel, I think, for when you have a setting like this. But you've had some cool settings in your books. I mean, obviously you mentioned a few of them, you know, with the Vlad the, and, you know, the one you tribute in Blood with Vlad, and of course the Night Flyer trilogy. What other, I'm aware of a few things you're working on. I don't know if you're talking publicly about them yet, but I will throw you the question. What other things are ahead as far as geographically that you are looking to explore or historical periods?
Well, the one that I'm working on now is called Viking Quest, and it's a rewrite of a book that I wrote well over 20 years ago. And, of course, writing styles have changed. It was never published, so I'm getting it caught up to all of the more current way of doing things and finding that, well, you know, this was good, but this can really be improved. Let me make this better. But, of course, it's right turn of the 12th century, right, 11th century, turn of the 11th century, Scandinavia, primary setting is in Jutland, but our characters travel across the North Sea to Greenland and meet Leif Erikson. And there's all these adventures along the way and battles to fight and sea monsters, trolls. And it's got some fantasy element in there as well as the historical. But I think it's going to turn out pretty cool.
Yeah, I believe you're working with Angar again, the cover artist on your trilogy.
I have found my artist.
he is good. He is really, really good, I tell you. But, definitely, folks, you got to see the three covers of the Night Flyer trilogy. Yeah, look them up, and when you see the covers, they'll be so compelling, you'll get the series. But they are gorgeous. And I suspect
I
the next one
to
will be too.
Him. I've had so many people compliment the covers and say they bought the book because of the cover. So, I mean, he's definitely done his job well.
It happens, the old book by its cover sort of thing. Yeah, it does make a difference when you got a catchy cover. That's no question about that. So, Mr. Dark, you've been quiet, and you are a historical person, so dive in here, man. If you got something.
I've just been listening real intently on her, and the settings that you decide that you want to go with, have you decided beforehand what era you want to be writing in, or do you let the story take you to that era?
I decided beforehand. When I was conceiving Viking Quest, for example, I knew that I wanted them to have a sit down and hear the story of Leif Erikson's adventure. So I had to put it at the right year that he would have gone to, you know, northern Canada, northern U.S., and North America, and come back to Greenland because of the failed colony experiment. And so I had to set it at the right year and the right time to fit that. And when I was coming up with the idea for the Night Flyer trilogy, I knew I wanted it to be in Renaissance Italy because there's just not a lot of stories set in Renaissance Italy, and it's such an exciting time period. There needs to be more stories set there.
Mm-hmm. You said that you did a lot of virtual reenactment of the area and stuff. How did you find the virtual of that time period?
Okay, for example, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, the art that's in museums now that was created at that time. But one in particular that I found very helpful was a 3D rendering of the Piata that you can turn with your mouse so that you can view the sculpture from every conceivable angle. And so I was able to study the work by Michelangelo without ever having gone to Italy to see it. You know, it's one thing to look at a picture of it, but to have that 3D model so I could look at it from top, side, bottom, back, front, and everything was like, you know, probably not as majestic as being there in its presence, but I could at least get the idea. And then I talked with friends and relatives that have been to Rome and have seen it in person to give me their impressions and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important.
Oh, that is very, very cool. And but getting back a little bit to some of the theme elements of your next book, I was just thinking, it just hit me, though, that there seems to be an uptick in interest about some of those Western voyages of the Vikings. They're lost a little bit in myth. There is some archaeological evidence for them. Really
yeah.
Cool stuff. And even the final season of the popular TV show Vikings kind of goes a little bit mm-hmm. into that territory. And I'm curious to see what they do with the next series that they're going to do, which is going to focus on, I believe, Leif Erikson is one of the main characters and some others.
Oh,
but it does.
Cool.
But it does seem like, yeah, and the timing for you is great, obviously. So,
I have started the series. I haven't gotten to the part where they're going that far west yet. But
I won't do spoilers. I promise I won't do spoilers.
And there's also archaeological evidence for the occasional female warrior. And, of course, in the Viking series, they call them shield maidens. And apparently that was what the designation was given to women warriors in that world.
Yeah, I did. I saw a fascinating documentary recently that actually is uncovering evidence of shield maidens, female warriors among the Vikings. And yeah, there's quite a bit out there that's been popping up that clearly shows that, yes, there was definitely a strong presence of female warriors in the Viking world. And there's a lot of stuff that's kind of rolling out on that front. And yeah, when you have a project like yours, I mean, I think that, yes, there's a good synergy there with, you know, some of the stuff that's coming out in the historical area.
Awesome.
And,
yeah,
and of course, that's like the coolest name you could come up with, Shield Maiden. I mean, if that's not like a all-female metal band, I don't know what is.
Oh,
yeah.
There was a...
Oh, yeah. What's that, Bill? Hey, Dale, what's that?
Oh, I was just going to say, I was researching another book idea that I never followed through and finished, but apparently there was a Lombardy princess from Italy at the time that Vikings were doing incursions into Italy, and she ended up marrying one of the conqueror dudes, and she was a 6-foot-tall female warrior from Italian descent, a Lombardy princess, and the stories were just amazing that she and her husband would fight together on the battlefield. She gave birth to 10 children, and she even went into battle pregnant, went off and left to go to the tents on the sideline to give birth to the child while the battle was going on. I don't know how much of that is legend and how much is fact, but I did read historical accounts about her. Maybe I'll revisit her one day.
Well, one society that I think
that is amazing.
Yeah, you want to read look at some accounts of some good female warriors in antiquity or you know, in older times. One culture to explore is the Scythians, and they were on the steppes of what is today Ukraine, Russia kind of territory.
Yeah.
But yeah, very much a warrior people, and they definitely had both male and female warriors that were. Very. You could find some stories like you're talking about in their culture and in their archaeology and everything like that. But the Scythians, a lot of fun to study that if you like female warriors of yore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely some fun stuff there to check out, which I had fun coming across that.
Like,
Celts had women warriors riding horses and stuff. So,
absolutely. And I don't think Boudica was not a pushover.
Everyone who's ever met a pregnant woman knows that they are not to be trifled with under any circumstances.
Exactly.
There's no question there.
Oh, well, Boudica, the queen of the Iceni with the battles with the Romans and almost beat them. Came very close.
Yeah.
And, there's some...
She's probably
rode
one
a
of
chariot.
The best documented. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rode her chariot right into him. Yeah, the Roman legions.
What is a day in riding for you?
A day in riding
for me. Yeah.
I get up early and make my smoothie and toast for breakfast and head out about 5:00, and I drive. And while I'm driving, I think of ideas of what's going to happen next in the book I'm on, or I'm thinking about 2, 3, and 4 plot ideas for books in the future. And if I feel like it's something I'm going to forget, I grab my voice recorder and make notes to myself. And sometime at the end of the day, when I finally get parked, I try to write some of it down before I fall asleep. Then, when I broke down like I am today, I will have all day tomorrow. I'll get chapter upon chapter done. Writer's block is not a problem for me. I have more of a writer's overload. I have more ideas than I have time to put down. But when I have time, like tomorrow, I'm not going anywhere. I'll get 100 pages done tomorrow.
Yep.
I know you say you don't get writer's block. Do you ever get writer's funk?
Writer's what?
Funk. Where you just sitting there going, why am I doing this?
No. I did back in the day when I couldn't get published and I kept sending things off and getting no response. And I gave up for that. I didn't do anything for 10 years. And then a friend of mine was putting together an anthology and said, hey, why don't you write a short story for my anthology? And I did, and it was included. And then I got in another anthology and another anthology and another. And then I had a publisher take me on for my novel, and then they went out of business, and then I just started my own publishing company.
Yep, that's the way to do it.
And that is the cue for me to say
I don't have to worry about
Past and Prologue Press.
That's right. I will never get another rejection letter.
You can write yourself. You pitch your queries to you.
Oh, right. You write myself one.
And have you turned yourself down yet?
Talk about existential crisis. That's amazing.
Read one of your books and said, no, that one ain't publishable.
I have so many unfinished manuscripts in bound notebooks before I had a computer. And I may or may not ever look at those again. But I've got a few ideas, probably about 6 or 7 halfway completed novels in my head that I don't have time to write them.
Same, sister.
Yep. I can relate.
can relate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But yes, the trunk. Yeah, the writer's trunk. Yeah. Always good to dig into that sometimes, though, and revisit some of those things that you have, manuscripts from the past that might just simply need a rewrite or a different approach at a later time in your career. And sometimes those can be reinvigorated. So, that happens. That does happen. But I'm with you. There's a couple of things in my writer's trunk that won't see the light of day. That's when I was honing my craft and not very successfully, but growing and definitely important part of my development. But yeah, they're definitely better kept in the trunk at this point.
Aww.
I know. I had a couple of those myself, but
you have writing. About how many words are you putting down at night?
Oh, this past week after I hurt my shoulder, today was the first day that I've written anything since the accident. Because for one thing, it hurt just to hold my arm in a position where I could type. But on a normal day, I might get 4 or 5 pages. I mean, my days are like 12 to 14 hours long just for my regular job, the one that pays for my writing career to exist. So, other days I can get, 10 or 15 pages done. And then there's the promoting and the editing and the marketing and all the other things and taking online courses to learn how to do things better.
Mm-hmm.
Never end. There's always something to do.
It's, yeah.
So do you pay for your main writer to go on book tours?
Oh, like a physical book tour where I actually go around to places and do signings?
Yes.
Oh, not since I started truck driving. I don't want to say how much I make a day doing this job. But I simply could not afford to take off and do a book tour where I might make 40 or 50 bucks.
Right.
Yeah, the lavish economics of the indie writer.
Exactly.
And with the technology that we have, it's so much easier to do things, online. If it's not worth or if you don't have the capacity to do a physical tour, that we have that option.
Yeah.
Well, right but now where we don't even have a choice. Yeah. Or almost,
yeah.
I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
That's true. I mean, before I was driving, I did.
Go ahead, hon. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. What were you going to say?
I was saying, do you have a podcast or anything like that you do through your publishing company? Or how are you advertising through your publishing company right now?
I mostly do Amazon ads.
Okay.
I run Amazon ads. Ooh. And they're probably do between 100 and 150% profit off of Amazon ads. So I'm making a lot more than I spend on ads through Amazon.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah, because that's an art.
Yeah.
You could do a whole show on those. I mean, Amazon ads and structuring them
Absolutely.
Right and how to do keywords. And yeah, you could
I have taken courses on how to do Amazon ads, and I'm in a group that's continually updating on what the newest and latest things and stuff are. So.
Yeah, it's a good point you mentioned that, because we often talk about how the ground in the indie book world changes every 6 months, it seems, and there's always new things being done or algorithms changing or this or that, new areas are being emphasized, other ones rising, other ones falling, and yeah, it's the continuing education aspect that you are illustrating is extremely important, and I think, you obviously agree.
So, for example, authors out there, when you put your book on Amazon and they say you can list it in two categories, that's all fine and good, but you can go back and put it in 10 categories.
Oh, really?
So, yes.
Huh.
So there's just, lots to learn and keep up with.
Start taking some notes here.
Yeah, actually, I did not know about that, about being able to backtrack on the categories. And yeah, that's something I did not know that. So yeah, I'm with RG, I'm taking notes in the corner. That's a good one.
You can get in real specific niche categories. So it just takes some research and stuff.
And it doesn't take much. I'll give you an illustration of that. We recently had a children's book come out by Brittany Cummings called Finds Trees. And one of the niche categories she was in, she did not have to sell more than a handful of books to actually get a number one bestseller tag. And even though, like I said, it was a niche small category and it didn't take many copies to get that, it just looks good for marketing when you can show that little graphic.
Exactly.
Sure does.
That's one of the greatest things about Amazon and about the indie market is that you can get those kinds of like buzz, that fun. You can be top of your category and be like the best of the best.
Yeah, exactly. Anything that helps.
Now, when you move up to the great nation of Canada, and I have so many Canadian friends I correspond with, love that country, but what are you going to continue doing truck driving, or what's your plans? Are you going to be getting more time to the folks in the book career, or what's going to happen after you get there?
Well, when I first get there, it's 2 weeks of quarantine because of COVID. And then I am going to be continuing to drive with my current company for at least another year. That hopefully will have me financially set, and my partner will be getting a job and what she's established. I hope to write full time. That is
awesome.
My goal.
Oh, yes. That's awesome. Yeah, that's the thing that we all all of us have talked about a lot.
That's what we all want.
Yeah, just enough to make it just enough that we could comfortably write for a living and not, like I said, panic every month, obviously. But I've often said I'd rather take a lot less money to do, that than make a lot of money being miserable. So, yeah, it's definitely definitely the goal. As far as things go, but you have to wear a lot of hats. You do have a lot of work.
I'm excited about it, though.
Yeah, because you were mentioning earlier how many things. Oh yeah, that's gonna be gold for your inspiration, as far as for writing and whatnot. Yeah, that's, I can't imagine that will have anything but great effect on your writing and getting out in that kind of scenery. And, you did get a question from the chat room. Clayton is curious. Why did you decide to move to Canada?
Well,
why not?
Why not? My partner's family lives in Canada, and her mother is getting up in years. She's in her 80s. Of course, my mother passed away 20 years ago. I was a late-in-life child. And my kids are grown and have their own families, and I'm kind of ready for a change. And it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful up there.
Yeah, I've been to Vancouver for a little bit. I've made a bit of a pit stop there for a few days. Once I was traveling up to Alaska. And, yeah, you are heading some beautiful country, that's for sure. That's going to be exciting. Yeah, I can't wait to see the photos you get once you get up there. That's going to be cool.
Oh, I will post some.
Awesome. Awesome. But when do you think you'll be all settled in and up there? When's you're going to have moved the base entirely? When do you think that's all going to occur?
I have no idea. Our house closes on March 1st. We hop in the car and start driving across the country. The household goods are getting packed up a couple of days before that, so we have catch up with the moving van. And even the household goods have to go in quarantine for 2 weeks before they can cross the border.
Oh, wow.
So then I'll probably spend most of March in Chilliwack. And then fly back down and get my truck and go back to work until I make enough money that I don't have to drive anymore. So,
adventures.
Wow, that's literally living the dream. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
No,
I've always
cool stuff.
Thought, because we're currently, this is probably a whole different area, but we're currently reading the Anne of Green Gables books, which is on Prince
uh-huh.
Edward Island, and, like, just the description of it just sounds
yeah.
so gorgeous. Like, I would love to go
yeah.
there someday.
Well, it's a little bit cooler over there than it,
yeah.
it is in British Columbia, but
yeah.
there's, I tell you, I have driven through all 48 states and regularly do at least once a year, and I can tell you that top to bottom, coast to coast, everywhere I go is beautiful. It's all
mm-hmm.
different. It's all unique. It's a different terrain, a different landscape, a different feel, a different mystique, but it's all beautiful.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Yeah, I was going to say that definitely being doing what you do as a truck driver, I mean, yeah, you definitely, I'm sure, have gained an appreciation for different regions and passing through
mm-hmm.
different areas and whatnot. I know you probably would like to explore more. I know you're on deadlines when you're
yeah.
trucking and have to get things from A to B, but yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've driven by the sign that says, turn here to go to Niagara Falls, but I can't ever
oh.
go to Niagara Falls because there's nowhere for trucks to park. and I have gained great appreciation for salt trucks and snowplows. Great appreciation
Absolutely. I'm
for salt
sure
trucks
that's true.
And snowplows.
us too. Holly and I actually today, we followed one back to Frankfurt on one stretch of road just to get behind
nice.
It because it was de-icing.
Yeah.
So we actually slowed down to follow it.
Yeah.
That's too funny. Sorry, Daniel. What was that?
So when you leave the trucking finally, are you going to think about doing a road tour in the car or anything to go to all the places that you've seen trucking that you couldn't stop at?
I think I'll be ready to stay at the house for a while. I've already
See,
been
me. Yes.
I've already been traveling for 7 years, so I think I'll be ready to stay at the house for a while. Maybe go to some of those locations that I wanted to use the settings and get to see those in person.
That sounds
yeah,
nice.
That, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, because if you can't stop at all the places, you must have been making a list, as it were. as you passed various sites and whatnot.
Yeah.
And yeah, but I wish you came through Kentucky though, because you could always, you're always would be welcome to park your truck here.
So, thank you. I'm sure there's so much room in your driveway.
It's at the end of a court, so we'll just tell the neighbors that you could just, this is the plan, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to see her truck around in that little cul-de-sac.
You'll see me turn around and that.
I have had a one of my cousins was a truck driver, and he would drive the cab part. He'd leave the trailer somewhere else, but he actually did bring that in and parked it down in the cul-de-sac in front of the house, just the cab part, and was able to do that without causing a ruckus. So I guess it's possible.
I can park my cab in my son's driveway at his house, but.
But what's going to be the release schedule for the coming year? Let's give us a little picture of releases to look forward to, in addition, obviously, to the current one, Chaos in Milan. I'll mention that again.
Okay.
And but what's coming up?
Well, coming up is going to be Viking Quest, followed by Missing in Milan, a Night Flyer story. And I got to finish those two first before I know if I have time to get a third one in for 2021. It really depends, I guess, on how often I stay broke down. But those are the next two on deck that I've got all completed in my head and ready to put on paper.
Well, that puts us in a conundrum because we don't want you to have your truck broke down, but at the same time, we love hearing that, you know, you're getting riding done. So that puts us in a bad spot.
Yes, I know. I've got ideas for something really different, which is a Native American story, which goes would be set in the Pacific Northwest before the Europeans arrived there. I have an idea of one set in 1800s Australian sheep country. I just got so many ideas. I just have to have time to do them.
Well, that's the fun part about historical fiction is there are so many untold stories and so many regions that have not been explored or time periods in certain regions that have not been explored.
Yeah.
Largely untapped. I mean, it's definitely rich, fertile ground. That's for sure, whether you're speculative fiction or doing, you know, alt history or just straight historical fiction.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there's a lot. And, yeah, there's lots to tap into. And that's the fun part for somebody like you, I imagine.
Oh, well, you know, you've got about 1,000 years of recorded history to go digging around in. And then you can be like Jean All and go to prehistorical societies and, you know, lots and lots to choose from.
Yeah, that's or go like in the movie world. I think of the movie Quest for Fire. If you remember that one, go prehistorical.
Yes.
go truly old school.
Are you going to drive your truck to the center of the earth?
What now?
What's that?
Are you going to drive your truck to the center of the earth?
Well, you know, I've been hearing about this big cave entrance that goes so deep nobody's ever explored all the way in. I doubt my truck would fit, though. It's pretty big.
That's the author's, you know, prerogative to be able to shrink it down and stuff like that and make it fit in different places. So
that's true. Honey, I shrunk the truck.
Just get one of those Doctor Who trucks and then it'll be small and it can fit in lots of places, but it'll be bigger on the inside.
Ah, like Hermione's purse.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool.
Very nice. Yeah, they're sparking a little discussion in the chat room on some of the historical novels and whatnot now. Clayton mentioned one of the historical fiction series that I personally love, Colleen McCullough's Masters of Rome series.
You know, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's
and
a good
I,
one.
I, but, of course, I love the Bernard Cornwell series of The Last Kingdom and all the ones about Britain and King Alfred and...
Yes, that's a The Last Kingdom is a series of Holly and I just love, and I love the novels. I've got those as well, Bernard Cornwell.
Yeah.
But I even noticed that even made it into the pop culture world a little bit more because Elon Musk evidently had his son get a haircut based on The Last Kingdom. So I'm assuming it was from the main fellow in The Last Kingdom. Ulfbert, Bebbanburg.
Yes. Yeah.
But
Elon
Musk just had his son got a haircut that was based on that show. So that's made it. But hopefully, they got another season or two left in them there because I thought that was, oh, God, I loved it. I'm a sucker for that time period.
I've watched all of the ones that they've got out on Netflix so far.
Yeah, I'm current so far. And was sad to see the end of the Vikings show, just to mention the other one that was set in that same zone. But hopefully the next series will be a good one. Yeah, but I'm glad they've got some good shows like that. But sometimes they do. They play in this sub. Does it irk you as a historical person, does it irk you a little bit the way they play fast and loose in some of these historically set shows? But they really, they go all over the map sometimes and put in stuff that is definitely not historical. Does that ever irk you a little bit, or do you just take it as part of the tools of storytelling?
Well, it depends on how far off the chart they go. When I was writing Vlad, a movie about Vlad the Impaler, I think it was called The Dark Prince or something, it was a really B-minus movie, came out, and it was so historically inaccurate that it just gave me fits. One thing they had, Vlad in a sword fight with his brother, who had died long before. It was just so, so bad.
I always hate that.
if it's
when you
well
know
done and they're
and,
just taking
yeah.
some, a few historical liberties to make the story flow better, or take something
sure.
that actually took 6 months to transpire so they can fit it into
mm-hmm.
a week so it fits in the show. That's one
right.
thing. But when they resurrect dead people and have them go off on sword fights, it's just...
Well, it makes for better TV.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I agree with it, but...
I think an example of a show where... they took historical license, a lot of things, but it worked still as a great movie, was probably like Braveheart. A lot of stuff inaccurate,
yeah.
if you really dig into
yeah.
it,
yeah.
but the movie was fantastic and flowed beautifully,
oh, yeah.
and I think that's an example of one that you might be referring to. And I do apologize. Ulfbert is a great Saxon name. It's a real Saxon name, folks, Ulfbert. But I meant Uhtred from that show, The Last Kingdom,
yeah.
Uhtred of Bebbanburg.
Uhtred.
I got that wrong.
Yeah.
Apologies. But
that's okay.
I knew something stuck in my head. I knew I had the U in my head, but for some reason I said Ulfbert instead of Uhtred. But the great Saxon names.
It's not a name that your neighbor gives their kid, So we don't hear it that often.
Well, you never know. Maybe with the popularity of these shows, it'll make a comeback after a millennium and a
That would be cool. Of course, then you're going to have to bring back, like, Ermengarde and those kinds of names, too. So, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, there's some fun stuff there. But, yeah, it's a good, they're good shows. And, yeah, as far as, I mentioned Braveheart being one. I can think of a few others, that definitely kind of get into that. Last Samurai even gets in that a little bit, where there's some history there, but some stuff that definitely is a little bit narrative and, storytelling techniques.
Right.
And you kind of need to change some things up. But, yeah, it does. Yeah, you have to make those decisions sometimes, I think, just to make a story flow.
Yeah. But the thing is, they're very historically accurate as far as the settings, as far as the way that life was at the time, even if this character didn't have that name or didn't say this or didn't do that particular action, they're still presenting the world in a very realistic manner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the key. As long as they show the world in a generally realistic manner and show grittiness and all. That's what I like about Vikings. They really played fast and loose with the history of the Rus, what is today modern day Russia. I mean, at that time, that state was founded by, largely Vikings from Sweden went and created the princes of Novgorod and Kiev and whatnot. But they tied it together with the Viking world and had some really cool stuff in the story with Ivar the Boneless and all. And I was like, where are they getting this from in history, though? Some of the stuff that's in there. But at the same time, at least they showed you felt the cold, you felt the grit. It was, the wind, the bite of the wind. I mean, you could feel the history there. And so even if they played fast and loose, at least the setting had the feel, I guess is maybe the best way to say it. And that's cool.
Yeah.
And I love historical stuff. I'm I haven't had the academic background that you have, but I have had the passion for it. I love it. Yes, love always soaking
there
up what
go.
I can.
Well, I will take the passion over the academic background anytime.
Well, thanks. I certainly will always try to reflect that whenever I do get into some historical ground. But it is definitely fun. Now,
I will tell you, my students would be surprised because I had so many students who would come into my class, history's boring, it's my least favorite subject, and they would leave saying, history's exciting, it's my most favorite subject, because I was so enthusiastic about what I was presenting to them that it just rubbed off. And there's a lot of dry, boring history teachers out there, so...
Yeah, a good history teacher can make it come alive and make you – I had one of those teachers in high school, and that was just gold. I mean, that really, really inspired me in high school. And I mean, definitely can, one teacher can make a huge difference in how you look at history. Daniel and RG, what about you all? Did you have any teachers of that nature or the other kind?
Well, my English teachers, which got me started – Go ahead, Daniel.
Go ahead, hon.
Well, no, I was just going to say I had two or three English teachers right in a row that got me hooked on writing and on reading and, just all that kind of juicy goodness, which I'm still holding on to today.
Awesome.
I had one history teacher that wrote in my yearbook that I would become a museum curator later on in my life, and I laughed about that at the time.
Huh, that is interesting.
Well, I mean, you are a walking passion of history, Daniel. I mean, you really are.
Say,
I mean,
now you're a historical
literally represent
icon yourself.
You represent the Victorian era. I mean, you are it.
Yeah.
You are living history, literally.
But at the time and everything, at like 15, 16 years old, I was just like, you know,
right.
You're crazy.
Yeah, no way.
Is it just me, RG, but knowing Daniel and maybe Dale's known him long enough to wonder this too, but I always wonder when he was born, was he born with a top hat?
Right.
Is that there?
And the little glasses, like little baby Daniel with the glasses. And the, yes, I can see it. Yep. Sitting in the little perambulator with the, yeah.
Well, I started wearing glasses when I was 3.
Okay. Mm-hmm. See? Yes. I can see it in my vision.
Yeah.
my little geeky self at 3 years old. Yeah.
The little vest. You got the little vest going on, riding around the neighborhood in your giant bicycle.
Yeah, oh yes, the penny farthing.
That
a legendary.
Oh boy.
Yeah, he didn't start on a tricycle, Dale. He began on a penny farthing.
Oh my goodness.
See, now we're talking about inaccurate history. Listen to us.
Yeah, now we're embellishing. We're embellishing. Or are we?
Daniel Dark's whole backstory.
Yeah. Are we embellishing or retconning, or are we? We'll leave it up to you
or
all
are
to
we?
Decide.
Exactly.
Artist license.
Right, artistic license.
The other pet peeve that I have, and I'm curious, Adele, to hear your take on this, is when you have something that's in like a false, like a fictional historical setting, like Game of Thrones, uh-huh. for example, or like any kind of like Renaissance-y, you know, muddy village kind of historical.
Mm-hmm.
But there's stuff like dragons and, you know, like, maidens and unicorns and I'm like there's that kind of stuff, and yet the storyteller includes like things that are horrible, like certain, you know, misogyny and rape and all this kind of stuff, because and the reason they include it is because it's historically accurate. I'm like, dude, there's dragons. You can't pull the historically accurate card.
Well, to me, if they're bringing in dragons and unicorns, we have left history and gone into the realm of fantasy where absolutely
right.
anything is possible.
Exactly.
And
I, you know, and I'm not
that,
espousing that, yeah, that there
yeah.
wouldn't be, like, terribleness in such a world, but to say because it's historically accurate, I think it's just no, I don't accept it.
No, because in that particular fantasy realm, that's the way
mm-hmm.
life was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
or.
You could go, you know, you could go the other direction and have a fantasy
right?
world where, you know, things are much more good and pure, and you know the really horrible is the exception rather than the rule.
Right.
You could take
yes.
it either way.
Mm-hmm.
See, I like that. I don't know. I feel if you're going to be imaginative, then be imaginative, you know, like tell a story. Don't. Yeah. Anyway, that's a whole nother episode. I just was curious.
Ah, but then there are historical anecdotes, though, as far as like every culture, ancient culture, ones that did not interact with each other, that were separated by oceans, all came up with
uh-huh.
dragon lore and giants. They exist in all cultures
that's,
all across the world.
Oh, yeah.
That were separated.
And
so,
yes.
Ha, interesting stuff.
I have
true.
A theory on that. That there were probably a very small number of certain dinosaur-like species
mm-hmm.
that survived the mass extinction. And maybe there was just a few of these creatures here or a few of these creatures there, and that's the way people interpreted them. I don't know. It's possible. They did.
That's
they
possible.
Did. I've
yes.
seen a photograph. I've seen a photograph of a Japanese fishing boat with a plesiosaurus in its net. It caught off the shores of Japan, and it was dead, but it was there. Its whole body was there, and they had to drop it because it was stinking too bad and making all the sailors sick. But I've seen the photograph of it. So if that one plesiosaur could still have existed in the 1970s, then it's certainly possible in the 10, 11, and 1200s that there was one or two of these odd creatures going about.
Yep.
Well,
I think I've seen
snake,
that very picture.
Ribbon fish is sort of like the snakes and stuff they show in Viking pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was that again?
The ribbon fish is similar to the snakes and everything they show out in the middle of the ocean from the Viking pictures and different things like that, the drawings.
Yeah, yeah. And they would have dragon heads carved on the ships. And, they look different than the Chinese interpretation of the dragon, but it was still close enough that you could tell they were representing the same type of creature.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah,
so
that's fun.
Most myths
like
are
the,
based on some kind of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, and
like the Thunderbird, stuff like that, that was, you know, in the Indian lore. Could have been a real bird and everything, because there's been birds that were caught or that were photographed that were huge.
Yeah, I love those stories of things that survive. I mentioned it on the show before, and that I love Steve Alton's Meg series. So you might know the movie version with Jason Statham.
I love Meg series too. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the idea that in the depths of the ocean, which we haven't really explored all that much of, let's be honest. That there are conditions where the famous megalodon still exists, possibly.
Maybe. It could still be down there. They're
finding
new species all the time.
Yep. Well, if you take
people
in Africa that, you know, somebody happened to be there when this tribe brought this fish in, and it was a fish that had been extinct for 50 million years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know,
the coelacanth. The coelacanth.
Fish for years, you know.
Yeah.
And somebody
actually
saw it. That was back in the 70s or 80s that they, you know, had a picture of and found out that the fish was not extinct.
I think that was the coelacanth, which has been confirmed. Still exists.
I remember reading about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, Clayton's calling me out in the chat room about
banana.
Still deep in the ocean that, you know, we can't get to even.
Oh,
yeah.
Clayton's calling me out for going back to megalodons. Yeah, he's heard me mention such things before. I love him, Clayton. I can't help it. And Alton is a good writer. He's a great writer. Yeah, nice guy, too. I've had some interactions with him. Very very friendly guy. Very good guy. It's such a cool
about
series.
Megalodons, there was one report that an oil rig off of Africa, that a shark got his head stuck in between two of the cables and just about ripped the oil rig down while the guys were up on top of it.
Yes,
and
I heard of that one.
Set apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, who knows? Yeah, because the thing I liked about Alton is he works a lot of oceanography into his stories. You really do learn a lot of marine science. He does, and just like in a historical novel, working historical elements into it, he does a great job of weaving the science of the marine life and oceanography and all into it. And he comes up with a very plausible. I've thought about it a lot.
It,
he comes up with a plausible
it,
way.
Makes it very
yeah.
believable. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's some cool stuff there for sure. And, yeah, Native Americans also have lore of incredibly giant sharks that they have sighted. Yeah, as well, the Iroquois do actually came across some of that. And so, yeah, that exists in different cultures as well. So, yeah, and people thought for years that giant squid did not exist until it was confirmed with, I believe, in Japan. Their ships confirmed the existence of a giant squid, got video footage of one that was like 70 feet long or something like that, something in that range.
Wow.
And confirmed. I mean, they found suckers on whales, they obviously exist, but they hadn't caught one on camera yet until, they did one expedition where they actually did catch one. And, giant squid or another one. Yeah, that goes back to the sea monsters of lore of the ancient world.
The Kraken.
Kraken. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Clash of the Titans, famous line. Yes.
Yes.
But, good stuff. Well, we're coming up on about 5 minutes left. So, Dale, what have we maybe not covered that you've wanted to get out tonight in our discussion, which has been a blast, by the way?
I have no idea. Thank you to all of my readers, new and old and soon to be. I appreciate you more than you can know. I hope that people who read my books will not only be entertained, but educated and enlightened as well. I try to have a positive message in all of my novels, even though they can be kind of dark, like Tribute in Blood is very dark. I think that it has a positive theme that comes through in the end. And thank you.
Well, I will say you can always work positive messages even into a dark edge story, because we all know life is not smooth sailing. So, yeah, the important thing is that positive element that you have to find. But I think that's very true of your work, as I find it. So I'm pretty excited about what you have coming ahead and what you have coming out now. And tell us how we can find you online. Give us some social media contacts and websites so everybody can look you up and buy some of your work.
Awesome. Melody Romeo on Facebook and Instagram. Edel Lane on, what's the other one? Twitter. And I have Amazon author pages under both names. On Goodreads and BookBub and just about everywhere out there. Past and Prologue Press has its own website that has little blurbs about all my books. You can pretty much just put either author name in Google and get tons of responses.
Yep. And you are definitely responsive, so far as like, folks reach out to you and all. I mean, you're one of those authors that can be engaged with, which is always a good thing, for readers and all.
Yes.
Yes, it's helpful. But and we'll spell your name just so people, because they've heard me say Edel Lane. I just want to make sure people know how to spell if they look you up like on Twitter, EDALELANE. So just make sure, you get that if you're adding Edel on Twitter, Edel Lane. Is her handle. I know it there for sure, because I know we tag each other from time to time. But I'm wishing you the best with everything, because you got an exciting year ahead, a new move, new historical settings to explore, and future looks, as they say, future looks bright, so you better get some shades. So the old song goes.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, Sue. And congratulations on all of your upcoming new things. I've been reading about.
I'm trying. I'm doing my best. Make sure that 2021's active. Yeah, Thank you. Thank you. And well, I will go ahead and I'll wrap up my part. And then Dale, if you'd like to say a final good evening message, and then RG and Daniel take us out. But yeah, this is Stephen. I've had a great time tonight. Definitely check us out next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern, for another Star Chamber Show live episode. Been a fantastic show tonight with Dale Lane, also writing as Melody Romeo, and of course, Past and Prologue Press. And so take care, everybody. Have a great evening, and turning it over to Dale, and then RG and Daniel take us out.
Thank you very much. Just remember, you are the captain of your own ship, the master of your own destiny, and the author of your own life. Make it whatever you want.
That's beautiful. And I'm already cyber-stalking you, so get ready.
Awesome.
And everyone listening, you can find me at rgwesterman.com. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. And it's been great chatting with everyone. We'll see you next time.
And this is Daniel Dark for a little bit of history. You learned a little bit tonight, I hope. And, you know, if you are a author, filmmaker, creative of any sort, be sure to listen next week to the Star Chamber. This is Daniel Dark signing off.